Interview with Professor Richard Murray, Murray, University of Houston, December 16th, 1974.
Obviously, in presidential politics, where the state has shifted to the point where the Republicans normally should expect to win it, and the Republican Party has become competitive in senatorial elections, and has approached competitiveness in gubernatorial elections, their normal vote should probably be about 40-45% now. And of course, that's very different than the situation in 1948 or so. The Republican Party, though, has not achieved competitiveness in legislative politics and doesn't, reasonably expect to do so, I think, in the 20th century. The rural small town areas in Texas have remained solidly Democratic in local political races. Pretty much anything below the governor. So we still have a very strong degree of one-partyism in the state. This is probably the strongest one-party state in the peripheral South, without any question, I think. I don't know how it would rate on a competitive scale nationally. It would probably be about fifth from the bottom of the list. And most of the Republican Party gains had occurred by the mid-60s. The party's made limited headway since, say, 64, 66. You could close that door if it's bothering you. I think the other gross trend, besides the fact the Republican Party has moved up a couple of significant levels since Key looked at Texas, is that the factionalism that Key identified as emerging in Texas, the conservative liberal split, did become the predominant feature in the state's politics through the 50s and 60s. It looks to be now, perhaps, on the wane.
Is it going to be replaced by something else?
I don't know. Maybe a politics of personality. But it's getting a little more difficult within the Democratic Party to identify the divisions. It would be something of a mistake to interpret the 74 Briscoe-Farenthal race along liberal-conservative lines, or even the 72 race, although superficially they were labeled the conservative and the liberal. I think an important factor that's happening here in this state is that beyond Briscoe, there is no statewide conservative leader of note. And there are no statewide liberal leaders of note. All the Democrats in line for position of authority in this state are moderates and not closely identified with either faction. The defeat of Wayne Conley in 1972 for lieutenant governor was probably a very significant election in this state because it cut off the obvious heir apparent to pull together the conservative Democratic factional forces. And Benson, who started off, of course, from his 1970 Senate victory over Yarborough as a strongly identified conservative, has probably, because of his national political interests, very clearly moved to the center and is not a traditional factional conservative Democrat in any sense. So I think the Republican Party has moved up so that it is competitive in a number of statewide elections and very strong in metropolitan areas. Figures to continue to be so. It's going to have difficulty enlarging its position. But the Democrats are probably going to be a somewhat more unified party in the future, at least that
Does that mean the politics of moderation? Sort of moderately progressive candidates winning?
Or just moderates. I don't know how progressive, but I guess in part the rising Republican challenges tended to drive the Democrats a little more together. And I would not underestimate the role of personalities that are involved here.
But the personalities will be more a force as to which of the moderates win rather than a distinction between actual issue-oriented positions, won't it?
Yeah.
Is there a difference? What's the difference between Hill and Hobby, for example? Except everybody tells that Hobby will get the conservative support and Hill will get more of the liberal support, but really there's not much difference.
A lot of difference in IQ, probably. But beyond that, I don't know. I think it's a little misleading to say Hobby would be the conservative candidate. I mean, you know, a lot of conservatives here in Houston hate him, for example, because of his association with the Houston Post and involvement in local school board politics and other things, and where he was on the opposite side of the fence.
What was his background on that? I'm just not familiar with it.
Well, the Post was a leading critic here in the 60s of the conservative-dominated school board. And in this town, school politics was a red-hot, hard-fought political issue from the 50s on. It got a deep dose of right-wing ideology infused in the conservative faction that organized for school politics here, the Citizens for Sound American Education. Very conservative group.
That was Nancy Palms' group?
Well, she was on, more or less on the periphery. They were, you know, they weren't aligned with the Republican Party. There was some overlap there, but they had a strong Birch element within the movement, and very, very strongly segregationist. And the Post more or less took them on and helped eventually defeat them in the late 60s. And so a lot of the local fairly well-known conservatives have very little good to say about Bill Hobby. They consider him not only to be dumb, but also dangerous from their perspective. So it would be really an oversimplification, I think, to think of if Hill and Hobby run, that Hobby would be the conservative and Hill the liberal. For one thing, Hobby has been, partly because of his newspaper background and positions on the school issues, has been very successful in courting black support. He got about 95% of the black vote against Wayne Conlin in 72. And I doubt he's going to want to write off the blacks. And, you know, traditionally in this state, that they're the most solid liberal voting element. Typically in a statewide race, if there's a clear liberal conservative split, the blacks will vote 92%, 94%, even 98% sometimes for the liberal, which is really an astounding primary vote cohesion. If you don't have party labels to help out. So I would have to reserve judgment on whether the 78 race would break along the liberal conservative lines. I think it would just be more a contest of personality. Hobby and Hill are the leading Democratic contenders. The liberals have had real problems of recruiting significant statewide leaders.
Is Bullock perceived as more of a maverick than a liberal?
Sure, certainly. I mean, he has very lately come around to a position where he's worked with liberals, just in the last year or two. He started off, he was an East Texas, very segregationist state legislator. And more recently, he was the hatchet man for Preston Smith, who was certainly no liberal. But Bullock has been willing to take on establishment Democrats sometimes. He was a real prick with respect to Ben Barnes. He just kept jabbing Barnes. And he's hard to type now. I don't know if he has much of a political future in the state. He's had some health problems. Seems to me there are some real heavyweights in the party that would probably...
How about Bob Armstrong and John White?
Well, they're in a kind of second rank. I would say, you know, if I were categorizing the Democratic leaders, Hill and Hobby are beyond Briscoe the most significant. In the second echelon, I would think perhaps Price Daniel Jr., who, although he's going to be leaving the speakership, has that great name and will remain active in Texas politics and has a kind of good government image and a lot of support from middle class, common cause, reform-oriented types. So he could be a factor in the future. Barefoot Sanders, who ran the 72 Senate race against John Tower, still around, still ambitious. I think Armstrong, Bullock, White would be in a third group, not likely to move much beyond the position that they're presently in. You know, we have such a scarcity of high-level offices here. I mean, those two Senate seats, Benson's unbeatable if he chooses to remain in the Senate. And, Tower's proven to be a lot more difficult to defeat than most thought.
But Price Daniel Jr., because of his name, record, and age, is still be perceived as a
Right, he's politically ambitious. His wife getting a divorce now primarily because of his long-term political ambitions. He's just not willing to go back to Liberty, Texas and become a lawyer and a good father.
Is he practicing there in Liberty?
He practiced a little law, but hell, you know, he was elected to the legislature when he was 26,
What's he doing
I
now?
Think. Well, he's Speaker of the House right now, which is a very powerful position in this state.
But he's leaving that.
He's leaving the position in January because he didn't run for re-election. Part of he was a reform speaker elected on the, among other pledges, that he would be a one-term speaker. Texas has had this tradition up through Sam Rayburn or so, and then it was breached and we went to two-term speakers. And the 60s, we had Mutcher, who apparently wanted to be speaker for life, and Daniel tried to break that tradition. But Price is, what, 33, I guess, so he's got plenty of time, 33 or 34. He would like to run probably for attorney general, possibly lieutenant governor, one of those positions opens up. I doubt if he would run for governor of the United States Senate in 78. The Republicans, of course, have terrific leadership problems within the state. Steelman looks impressive as a future party leader here, particularly the fact that he was able to hold his congressional district after it had been redrawn to include significantly larger numbers of Democratic voters. But I take it that Grover's finished as a party leader. In the legislature...
Would Grover have been elected if he'd gotten strong support from Tower and Nixon?
I don't know. He would have had, it might have been really close if that had been the case. I think he pretty well got most of his potential vote. The thing that made the race close was the fact that Muniz pulled off a significant number of votes from Briscoe. I have a table that we worked up for the 72 election.
Would you think this contention that it was the failure of Tower and Nixon to support Grover is a gross oversimplification?
Well, it probably hurt him a little, but whether it would have made a 100,000 vote difference. In 68, the Democrats carried the heavily Spanish surname areas by about 104,000 votes, 104,000. With about, 460,000 voting. In 72, with 550,000 voting, their margin fell to 79,000. And almost all of these Roger Unita votes would either have been no votes or Democratic votes. They would not have voted for Grover, because Grover got virtually no votes in those counties from Chicanos. So the strong race by Muniz, which of course was in some ways connected with Grover, since a good many Republicans put money into Muniz's campaign to make him a competitive factor, pulled Briscoe's margin down to the level where it was actually a pretty close race. You know, maybe if more money had been funneled into Muniz earlier, that might have made the difference. Because Ramsey, outside of Austin, didn't get much support from liberals that would disaffect. And that's usually been critical for a Republican to win. The reason he didn't get it was the nature of Grover. Liberals were frightened of Grover. They weren't willing to jump the party traces the way they did in 61, when they either didn't work or in 66.
What kind of guy was Grover? Power. Because I really know nothing about Grover.
He was a former conservative Democrat. He wanted to be Speaker of the House. He was very unhappy when the position suddenly opened up in 64 and Ben Barnes, with Connally's help, was elected as Speaker. The next year, he did a little calculating here in Harris County and figured out he could run as a Republican for the state Senate and almost surely win. And he did just that. He switched parties and won easily. Was reelected and reelected. He never got along well with Tower and the statewide party officials, Peter O'Donnell primarily. So he was something of a maverick. He he was more or less representative of this insurgent faction within the Republican Party. Its strongest base has been the Palm Republicans here in Houston. But they have considerable strength in other areas of the state, the Permian Basin, Midland, Odessa, Amarillo, Beaumont, the Valley, areas where there was a core of hardline conservative Republicans who thought that the Tower O'Donnell people were too inclined to be pragmatic about things, and B, not really interested in building a strong state Republican Party, but interested in protecting Tower and his Washington connection. Of course, in 72, the insurgents got control.
Is that view they have of Tower an accurate one?
I think Tower is a fairly typical American politician. He's first concerned about his own skin and second about his party. He has not worked very hard to build a strong state Republican Party. And I think in part because that would probably be detrimental to his interest. One thing would create more competition for position of leadership within the state, since he's the only major state elected official who's a Republican. But
and two, it would also energize the opposition.
Right. It would create a situation where it would make it more difficult for Tower, perhaps, to appeal to some disaffected Democrats when he himself comes up for election. So he's, you know, not really worked very hard at putting the party together, and so I think some of the criticisms that Ms. Palm and other people in the party have made of him are fairly accurate.
What's your comment about the Republican state chairman's assertion that the party isn't really that bad off after 1974 and might be better off than the rest of the Republican parties in the South?
Well, they didn't suffer as badly here as they did in some states. I tend to think of the governor's race was a little misleading. Briscoe was such a new governor, you know, he's only been in about 19 months or 21 months or whatever it was. He hasn't really done much. He's been blessed with a lot of money that suddenly materialized, and so it's very difficult to run against him, and he's terribly strong with rural conservatives, and the Republicans normally get a fair hunk of the vote there, so Granberry just, you know, never had a chance in that race, and the party held pretty much what it had in the legislature and lost one congressional seat, so they didn't suffer much from the national Democratic sweep. But the problem with the Republicans, it seems to me, is that hell, they're no further along than they were 10 years ago. They don't have any, they're internally divided. They don't have any natural party leaders to turn to. I think, in retrospect, a critical election for the Republican Party was 1970. Bush epitomized, it seems to me, the alternative strategy that has been pursued in a number of peripheral South states with success, where a Republican makes appeal to normally Democratic segments of the electorate and picks up enough support from those to win. Bush, for example, cultivated blacks, browns, worked hard to establish a moderate image, and I think was the strongest Republican electorally in Texas by far. I think he's a lot stronger candidate than Tower. But hell, in 64, when he ran for the Senate, he wasn't too well known then, didn't have a local base. He was the county chairman here in Harris County, never held elective office before. And he ran into the Johnson landslide. He got beat pretty badly, but he ran a hell of a lot better than Goldwater did. In 70, everything looked great. He set up to take on Yarbrough, and Ralph starts with 35% against him, so all you've got to do is pick up 15 or 16%. But, you know, then Benson comes out of nowhere, wins the primary. At first, Bush thought that was fine, but it turned out Benson was just a hell of a lot tougher than anybody estimated. He was well-financed, and he had some things going for him. 70 was a good Democratic year again, and there was a liquor-by-the-drink proposition on the ballot here that really got out the rural, small-town vote, and that killed Bush. Benson swamped him in these small counties in East Texas, North Central, and there was very heavy turnout in that election, much heavier than a normal off-year senatorial election. So Bush was defeated, and since he's always been interested in going to Washington, too, and not in running for governor or building a particularly strong state party. He's sort of drifted out of state politics, and of course now he's completely out. But I think if Bush making the kind of moderate appeal, trying to pick up significant support from blacks and browns, had won, the party, Republican Party, might have broken out of this the restraints that it seems to me to be presently hindered by, and that is, hell, it only appeals to white, middle class, or conservative voters. And in this state with two large minorities, if you write those off, you've got to get 5 out of every 8 votes from their own, because they, about 20% of the electorate in most elections are black or brown. And that was Grover's position. Now, he explicitly stated at the beginning of the campaign, I don't want black or brown votes. Those people are liberals. I'm a conservative. I mean, it's, you admire his candor, but
not his strategy.
Yeah, and it worked. I mean, he didn't get any black or brown votes.
But he did almost win.
It would be your observation that Harris County is the best organized county, both in terms of Republicans and Democrats in the state.
It's not terribly well organized for the Democrats. Republicans are well organized here, yes. I don't really know enough about the inner workings of Dallas County. Dallas is a more conservative county. There are fewer blacks and far fewer browns there, so that the Republican vote looks better out of Dallas County because they just have a more favorable constituency to work with and very little organized labor, too. So, you know, Dallas County outperforms Harris for the Republican Party. But I would, you know, my top-of-the-head impression is that probably the local Palm organization is the best.
Is that how you explain the election of the county judge?
One of two or three things. The incumbent had a number of problems. He'd been involved in a fracas that lawsuits were filed over a year or two ago. And then there was an extensive grand jury investigation, and things kept leaking, and you know, people were saying the county judge is going to be indicted and so forth. He wasn't indicted, but the grand jury did issue a report a couple of months before the election saying that there had been undue use of influence by friends of the judge, and you know, he was his reputation was certainly stained. He did nothing to counter this. He just more or less counted on the Democratic sweep carrying him in. He only raised $15,000 when, if he had hustled, he could raise $150,000 or $200,000, and mounted an effective PR campaign to soften some of these negatives. But he didn't do anything, and the electorate, there's a large element of the electorate in this county that is a swing vote electorate, ticket splitting, that you're sure very familiar with, and a hell of a lot of people here, while they were voting Democratic, did cross over and vote against Elliott. So his own, the county judge's own ineptitude hurt him a lot, and then the fact that the Republicans were well organized and did work hard for Lindsey, that was, you know, the organization put its effort behind him. And they didn't have much money, but they did have some, and they gave most of it to Lindsey. And they worked hard for him and pulled it out for him. The turnout in their precincts was pretty good. It was 36, 38, 40%. In the Democratic precincts, it was 20, 22, 24. So I would rate first Elliott's ineptitude in the campaign. He had soured on the office. He had reached the point, so the public be damned, if they didn't recognize a good public servant, he wasn't going to work too hard to change their minds. And secondarily, the organizational factor that got the turnout up. But the local Republican organization is impressive. Of course, it's confined to about 200 precincts out of the 450 in the county. There are 100 ethnic precincts here where there's virtually no Republican vote. There are about 150 other precincts that either are rural or heavily labor or elderly that the Republicans just don't have organized. But west of Main Street, they have quite a formidable organization. They've drained off all the activists from the conservative Democrats. That's why the conservative Democrats here are toothless. They're just dead. They don't have any workers. All the dedicated conservatives here that work in campaigns have gone into the Republican Party.
So has there been a political realignment in Harris County?
Oh, sure. Here there's nothing but liberal, moderate Democrats and Republicans.
Has that resulted, how much of a factor has single-member districts been in that?
It helped. It helped a lot because, you know, if you're much familiar with Texas politics, the conservative Democrats work this double switch. In the primary, they appeal for Republican voters who don't vote in the Republican primary because that primary draws virtually no participation to come over in the Democratic primary and help them defeat the liberals. And then in November, they want the normally Democratic vote, much of which went to the liberals, the primary, to switch, hold and vote for the conservative Democrat and to defeat the Republicans. We worked on a table in some of the precincts in Houston and Dallas showing how this switch works where, here you can see the primary vote is not a good predictor at all for Briscoe of his November vote. The precincts he carries in the primary, he loses in November because of this flip-flop that occurs. But this flip-flop doesn't work well unless you have large electoral units that have, you know, a lot of conservatives and a lot of ethnics and liberal voters. When you get single-member districts, you get much more homogeneous districts, and there's no possibility for working the double switch. And that's what's happened here in Harris County. Almost every district, when you draw them for 75,000 people for House districts, is either going to be Republican or Liberal Democratic.
What's the status of these other multi-member House districts?
Very, very...
it's in federal court, right?
Right. And the order, there was an order for requiring single-member districts throughout the state, but that order was stayed. There's a good chance, I think, the legislature in 75 will go ahead and redistrict itself into single-member districts just to retain control of the process. The impact would probably be greatest in Tarrant County. It would.
That's Fort Worth.
Right, which is, you know, a huge single-member district. Multi-member district has 750,000 people in it. And if required single-member districts becomes a uniform fact here, the Republicans will pick up 5 or 6 more seats in the House. I would give them 22, 24, 26 maybe in a good year. And probably the ethnics will pick up 2 or 3 more seats than they presently hold.
Then you don't see that alignment changing much between now and the end of the century?
Not very much. The Republicans are so far from becoming competitive in the 35 or 40 rural districts of the state, excepting the Panhandle and a district or two around San Antonio and the German Hill Country, that, you know, it's just very difficult to foresee them breaking through. Everybody who's young and politically ambitious there runs a Democratic primary. The courthouse gangs are solidly Democratic. You know, there isn't a Republican office holder sometimes within 100 miles. The courthouse gangs, particularly in these small counties, want those counties to stay uniformly Democratic. Hell, most of those guys never have a challenge.
So they stay solidly behind the statewide Democratic candidates?
Well, they'll defect if they don't like the statewide Democratic candidates, they'll defect or won't work very hard for them. But boy, at the local level, they don't want local Republicans. They might, you know, it might be all right to vote, certainly all right to vote for Republicans for president. That's fine. And whether the courthouse gangs support the Democratic nominee or not, it depends very, very much on the given election. They certainly didn't in 72. But in governor, they're usually going to go with the Democrat. That's one reason Republicans haven't won. But below governor, they're solidly Democratic, and they will work for the local Democratic nominees. And, you know, they're breaking through, and it's going to be very tough there. Sharpstown was the biggest scandal this state's seen. But it's gone, it's washed out, and it didn't produce any substantial realignment. All of the real fighting took place within the Democratic primary, and it finished off the career of Ben Barnes, who looked like the, you know, the great rising star.
Well, it didn't result in the election of a group of new statewide officers.
Yeah, it did.
Finished off Barnes.
But all from all Democrats.
And you got some legislation in 73.
Right, and we'll probably pull back a little from that in 75. There's been some criticism of this.
But the effect of that's over?
Well, yeah, Watergate is Sharpstown is gone as a political issue in Texas. There's no mileage in it.
Has it affected the style of Texas politics substantially?
Well, I think it's probably made
this longtime connection between the corporate establishment and the conservative Democratic faction a little less close, because there are obviously great political dangers now of any kind of obvious conflict of interest.
But is that connection still there? Well, let me go back. In the 50s and the 60s, would that group have pretty well decided who the nominees would be for statewide office, particularly governor?
Yeah, every gubernatorial nominee that for the Democrats that won has been backed by a substantial conservative element.
Some say that now what's happened is that they have a veto over that, but they don't anymore really participate in the slot. But if they decide to get you or to veto it, they could do it.
Well, there isn't any tightly organized conservative faction in the state. Like Smith, who was a conservative, and Conley, who was a conservative, drew their support from quite different elements. It's a fairly loosely defined. There have been a lot of internal tensions. Within a community, it might be reasonably well organized. Dallas has a very well organized conservative community that can swing support from candidates or two candidates. Houston, less well organized. The old Johnson organization, as I understand, is pretty well gone now. The personal contacts with county judges and the influential scattered all over the state that Johnson put together and then that Conley used is fairly well dissipated. And there's really no comparable statewide organization today within the Democratic Party. Briscoe's leadership is very, very thin. I mean, he just doesn't work at it. He's got a few people around him that he deals through. But he can't, in 76, he won't be much of a factor, say, in presidential politics. Because he has no base within the party. He won primarily because he had a hell of a lot of money. And, he spent $1 million in 68. He didn't win, but he got name identification and built something of a political base in 72. He spent a couple of million more. And things broke very fortunate for him. Barnes was
Is that one of the keys to success in Texas politics, the amount of money you can spend in the election?
Well, it's such a big state. You get 22, 24 television markets here. You've got to have money, usually, or else start off being exceptionally well-known, like Price Daniel Jr. inherited probably about $500,000 name, people say. But you can spend $2 million so easily in this state and, just ready to get a decent campaign going. And Briscoe, it was not able to raise money. He's never been able to raise money. He's always had to spend his own. But he's got enough of it there to do so to whatever level seems necessary. And raising money here is getting to be tougher. This is one of the long-term problems we face. These new disclosure laws within the state are pretty tough. Like this year, Briscoe could raise nothing. He was a cinch winner, but he still couldn't raise any money. So he had to dig into his own pocket again. He had a big fundraiser, but Farenthal tied up the proceeds and he couldn't get to it. He's still in court over that one. You might have seen some of those stories in the press. Probably be resolved in the next month or two.
What campaigns have you specifically worked in?
As a full-scale consultant, I've only worked in local campaigns. I've done polling for Briscoe and Sanders in statewide races, but only in the Southeast Texas area, about 25% of the electorate live, because they've had major polling efforts going statewide, but they wanted more specific information on this particular region. I work for a lot of local candidates doing polling, Jordan, several other congressional candidates, a number of them unsuccessful, like Hackelman, who ran against Casey in the spring primary, judge candidates, so forth. Pretty low-level stuff. But
statewide, do you see any trends? I mean, is Texas becoming more conservative? Is it moving to the right? Is it moving to the left? Is it becoming more moderate?
I think it's hard to say whether it's becoming more liberal or conservative. I think elections here are getting more difficult to predict. The the number of voters who will switch in a, from election to election is increasing in the state. It's a very large number, certainly in presidential elections, and it's getting to be larger and even in governor's elections, although the Democrats, I think, start with a very substantial advantage. My top-of-the-head guess is the Republicans here start with a sure 30% in a gubernatorial election, and the Democrat with something between 40 and 45%. And, 45 if there's no Rossi Unita factor. So the Republicans have to get virtually all the swing vote, I think, to when I think that that swing vote is growing. The party ID is declining, or the Democrats have declined, the Republicans are holding steady at about 15% within the state. Bush, the dog Bush, I think his poll showed it was 16% Republican, 49 Democrat, 35 independent, and 70. In 72, Briscoe's polling showed that the Democratic identification was down 4 points or something like that. Republicans are staying at about the same level, somewhere in the teens. Most of those independents are certainly presidential Republicans, though. But the Republican Party could bounce back quickly here if it could find some horses that make the right kinds of political appeals. I think I just don't see anybody on the horizon, though, that they could do this. So I think we're going to remain a state where the Democratic Party is still the major vehicle for achieving political prominence. It's not much of a party. It's not well organized. It doesn't, as a party, it doesn't do much. But it's, you know, it's the way to power within the state.
Does big wealth dominate Texas politics on basic decision making?
Well, most of the people I think who are wealthy in Texas are corporations, aren't terribly interested in state politics. There are some who are, and then, you know, they have provided much of the money that's helped preserve the conservative Democratic hegemony, but I don't think it's as close a connection as some of the ideological liberals like Ronnie Duggar would like to make out. Big money has tended to support the dominant political faction, but I don't think big money runs the state of Texas. And I think that's getting less and less true.
Do they do it differently? In other words, do they do it by simply supporting candidates who think like they think?
Right.
Rather than someone who serves directly as their spokesman.
Well, I don't see any evidence of of a organized big money in this state. The big corporations in Houston, most of them are not Texas-oriented corporations. They're nationally oriented. They don't spend much money in Texas or in local politics. Many of them are fairly new here. In Dallas, you do have a more clearly defined elite.
But how about the lobbying groups in Austin?
The lobby's been very strong in Texas, I think the power of the business lobby is declining. A good test case coming up now is what's going to happen with Southwestern Bell. This largest of the Bell subsidiaries is now in a hell of a lot of hot water in this state. We're the only state without a utility commission. There have been a lot of seamy things coming out. Their manager killed himself a few weeks ago in Dallas, and his heirs are suing Southwestern Bell, and they're dragging out a lot of sensitive matters, double bookkeeping, payoffs to political figures, and so forth. So Southwestern Bell has been one of the more effective members of the business lobby in Austin. And the business lobby took it on the chin for the Sharpstown thing. Now they're catching it again. The publicity is improving of lobby activities. I think, you know, legislators and administrators, the governor and so forth are more sensitive now to these good government concerns and less likely to simply ratify what major financial interests want from them. Labor is probably getting a little more effective as a counter-lobby group in Texas. They've gotten more out of Briscoe than any governor in modern times. Still don't get much, but they have access anyway. So the old big business, particularly things like the Texas Manufacturers Association, the Brewers Association, the insurance and banking lobbies, ability to fairly well dictate legislative decisions in their areas of interest, that ability is declining. You're just getting more groups now involved in the fight, a larger number of voters who are sensitive to these considerations, a hell of a lot of them conservatives too, of course. It's a more chancy ball game. It's the people who lobby in Austin say it's getting tougher all the time. The old days when you could go to a couple of people and pretty well cut your deals are largely over. And I think if you look for a test case of whether big money dominates the state, you'd have to say if big money does, they would have passed the unitization bill in the 73 session. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but unitization refers to operating an oil field as a unit so that all the people who are extracting oil or gas from the unit must cooperate in removing the resources. The primary effect is that you get more out of it if you do it in this fashion, because you can do it in a regulated manner that will maximize retrieval. But the downside of that is that an individual extractor, of course, loses his complete freedom to take it out as quickly as he can. The major oil companies, particularly Exxon, pushed very hard for unitization. A pretty good article on that in the Texas Monthly, devoted just to the unitization fight, and they were beaten on the issue. Although it was as big a lobby effort as you'd ever get in Texas. They pulled out every stop they could. They probably spent $300,000 working on the legislature, and they still lost. I mean, they really wanted unitization, because unitization probably means for the major several billion dollars in additional revenues.
But the independents then were fighting it, right?
Some of the independents were. But the independents didn't have the money or the clout. You know, the unitization had most of the biggies behind it. Chamber of Commerce in Houston was lobbying strongly for it. Still got beat.
Are the ideological liberals in Texas becoming anachronisms?
They're still very important in presidential politics because of this caucus system.
About state politics.
Yeah, and you know, well, the presidential thing spills over because people are always working to preserve their base so they can throw their weight in when you have these caucuses in presidential years.
How do presidential delegates get selected in Texas? Is it something unique, different from other states?
Not really. We don't have registration by party. If you vote, say, in the presidential year, our elections are in May, our primary elections are in May, if you vote in the Republican or Democratic Party that day, then you're eligible to attend the precinct convention that day or evening. It varies county to county as to when it's held. Typically, in a contested presidential year, 5 to 10% of the people who vote in the Democratic Party would turn out, and in somewhat higher percentage of the Republican Party, because a few vote there. And these precinct caucuses are traditionally bitterly fought. The blood flows freely, especially in areas like Houston or Dallas or Austin, where you tend to have reason, some semblance of organization on each side. And the precinct caucuses are apportioned a certain number of delegates to the district or county caucus based on the vote for governor 2 years before the number of votes the Democratic or Republican nominee for governor got. They get a delegate for every 25 votes cast in their precinct. And so they select a delegation that goes to this county or senatorial district convention. And the process is repeated with, again, a certain number of delegates apportioned. And it lends itself to hell of a lot of hard fighting, complaints about enforcement of the rules, tendencies to gut the opponent if you get the opportunity.
But the delegates to the national convention are actually elected at the state convention?
Yes, but the present rules make it clear that 3/4 of those are in effect chosen at the senator, by the senatorial district caucuses, which leaves only a fourth is sort of free and open for the state leadership. And so the, you know, these are perceived to be important things and are hard to follow. And the liberals are very interested in presidential politics. The conservative Democrats are less interested. Why should they be interested? Hell, there's nobody in the Democratic Party they like. I mean, Scoop Jackson is far, far from their ideal candidate.
And how about Lloyd Benson?
Benson doesn't excite the old conservative workers, the people who put together precinct, anti-precinct efforts. Benson will have probably, because he'll be very well financed and well organized staff-wise, will have a good effort here. But he'll probably be lucky to come out of this state with half the delegates. The Wausauites on one hand, the hardline liberals on the other, are going to chew him up in a lot of these precinct and senatorial caucuses. My guess would be Benson will get 40-45% of the delegation that will go to the national convention. The Republicans, of course, haven't had very many good contests, and so things have been less interesting over there. If Reagan mounts a significant challenge to Ford, I assume that he would really mix it up in Texas and would have a hard-fought battles with the Republican caucuses. But in state politics, the hardline liberals are in a weak position. I mean, they don't have any good candidates. Farenthal seems to be discredited as a statewide candidate from here on in. The blacks, who used to be their strongest base of support, are indicating they're becoming more pragmatic. They want to go with people who can win and who can deliver. So the Mexican Americans, similarly.
How much damage did Farenthal do with staying in that vice presidential business?
I don't think that hurt her so much as getting identified as a McGovernite, as an advocate of women's causes. Then the issues that she had